Uncertainty, we've been coping with it nearly all year. For some people, sadly, some depressing certainties have replaced some of those what-if anxieties by now. But for most of us, outlooks are still up in the air. What will we be able to do? And where will we be able to go in 3 months, 6 months, 9 months' time? Will house prices stay up? Will our jobs last? Can I keep my business above water and hold on to staff? Will COVID come back? All those worries. Science does have coping strategies we can implement to cope with uncertainty. That's the bright promise from a psychology professor at Virginia University. Bethany Teachman is joining us. Hello.
Hi there. Nice to talk with you.
You too. It's not just the coronavirus and your politics at the moment over there. This is now a real age of anxiety for all sorts of reasons. The world is seemingly deeply unsettled.
Absolutely. There are numerous stressors in our environment right now. So in addition to coronavirus, the economy, climate change, racial injustice, politics, and all of these stressors are having an impact for lots of people. So we're seeing widespread increases in rates of anxiety, depression, stress, substance use. So we know that a lot of people are struggling right now.
Most of us hate uncertainty, but you find it professionally fascinating. Why?
Yes, I do. So with my students in our lab, we study how people think differently when they're anxious. So what's interesting about uncertainty is that we get to decide what to think when we don't know for certain how something is going to go, right? So it's kind of like a choose your own adventure situation. And it's a really interesting question about what happens when you don't have a script. So are you a person who chooses for stories to end really badly when you're not sure how it's going to go? Or are you a person who kind of assumes that things might go okay or goes in some totally different direction? And so we know that people who have a lot of difficulty tolerating uncertainty are more at risk for a variety of mental health problems, especially different kinds of anxiety disorders. But what's important to know is that that's actually something that people can change. It's not an easy thing to change, but we can change our ability to kind of sit with uncertainty. And so what we study is kind of trying to better understand how is it that we can help people learn to tolerate uncertainty and not jump to those terrible conclusions when they don't know exactly what's going to happen next. And it's a skill we all need a ton right now because so much feels uncertain in the world that we're living in right now.
You talk about a story, not knowing the story. And is there a difference between the short story and the long story? I mean, we all get anxious prior to things like public speaking or the big job interview or paying next month's mortgage. These are specific and hopefully short-lived, often, anxieties. Is it the same for the kind of generalized anxieties we're also experiencing?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I don't think we have a perfect answer. But we're constantly, as human beings, looking for ways to kind of form a narrative. And so we fill in the blanks for both big and small things. And we do it in a particular way when we're anxious. So what we often will see is that someone will take something that's small and turn it to something that's bigger. So for example, a person who's anxious who, you know, has just taken a test in their class and wonders if they did okay or not is likely to not just jump to the conclusion that they did badly on the test, but then it spirals, right? Not only did they do badly on the test, but maybe that means they're going to fail the course. Uh-huh. And what if that means they're put on probation at school? And what if they get kicked out of school? And what if that means they can never get a job? And what if that means they're going to end up homeless on the street because they can't pay their bills, right? So these things that start out as actually it was just a small 10-point quiz spirals because of all these what-if questions a person asks. So that line, that perspective that you were talking about of, is this a small thing or a big thing, that actually gets really blurred when we're anxious and kind of magnifying how catastrophic different events would be.
I'm sure a lot of us can relate thoroughly to what you've just described. Is it typical, usual for our minds to catastrophize the future?
Well, it's an interesting question. It's typical for our minds to predict the future, but it's not necessarily the case that we do it in a catastrophic way. So we do it in a catastrophic way if we're under a lot of stress, which most of us are right now, or if we're a person who's prone to anxiety or depression. But what's important to keep in mind is that that's not inevitable. It's tied to our belief about whether we have the personal resources to meet the demands of the situation. So if I have that big job interview next week, that's kind of an objectively challenging situation. But it can be challenging, but not really terrifying and threatening if I think, actually, I'm pretty good at interviews. I can prepare for it, think about how I want to handle the questions, and I've kind of got the personal resources to be successful in this situation. It becomes terrifying, overwhelming, catastrophic if I think, there's no way I can do a decent job in this. There's no way that I can sort of make this go well. And so what that tells us is that we have the potential to change either part of the equation, right? We can either work on our beliefs about our resources, the ability that we have to meet the demands, or we can change our perspective on just how demanding is that situation likely to be. So is the person interviewing me likely to try to ask super nasty trick questions? Or is it likely to be more like a conversation? That's changing the demand side. If I change my belief about, actually, I'm pretty good at thinking on my feet, so whatever it is, it's okay, I'll be able to handle that. I'm changing my belief about my resources. Now, none of this is easy to change. It takes a lot of practice. But when you recognize that there's kind of just this equation between what am I being asked to do? What are the demands of that situation? And to what extent can I meet those demands? It gives us a lot of places where we can intervene and think about changing how we respond to these challenging situations. So they stay as challenges rather than as an insurmountable threat that we can't possibly handle.
If you can manage to flip that in your head and typically approach the future with optimism rather than pessimism, as you're describing, does it become a habit and does it become ingrained? Can you make that change?
Absolutely. What gets people into a lot of trouble is that tendency to think in rigidly negative ways. The reality is that some situations will turn out well and some situations, unfortunately, will turn out badly. But it's walking around thinking there's only one way of looking at a situation that gets people into a lot of trouble. So a lot of the work that we do is not trying to sort of make people falsely positive, because that's probably not going to be very credible to them. Rather, what we want to do is help people learn how to take different perspectives, to practice thinking about situations in new ways. And by developing that flexibility in their thinking, that allows them to realize they can respond to the different demands of a situation, because it's not always going to go one way. But it is the case that people can concretely practice this skill, practice different ways of looking at situations, and then by doing that, it becomes more habitual. So initially, it takes a lot of work, right? It's effortful.
Yeah.
But over time, as you get some experience and some success in doing this more flexible thinking, it can become more automatic. And so a lot of these programs are trying to shift these thinking patterns to this new style that over time gets easier and easier for people to do.
It's interesting that you say we think differently when we're anxious. And we probably hear that sentence and think, well, that's obvious. But in fact, there's a profundity to it, isn't there? Because we probably all thought of something that's coming up in our lives. I can't cope with this. I've bitten off more than I can chew. And yet you start making inroads. You start addressing the problem. You start doing stuff and solutions appear. And it sounds so obvious, but our minds haven't let us operate beforehand the way minds operate once you get going on a problem.
Absolutely. And there's two really important points to what you're saying that I want to emphasize. One is sort of sometimes our lack of awareness about the ways we think differently when we're anxious, because it actually affects all kinds of parts of our thinking. But if we don't realize that's happening, it's much harder to kind of correct for it. So you use the example of how lots of people are anxious doing public speaking. And that's absolutely true. On surveys, people rate that as one of the scariest things that they have to do sometimes. So we know that people who are prone to social anxiety, for example, they're not only having the occasional negative thought, but the way they pay attention in that situation has changed. So if they're looking at a sea of 100 faces and 99 people are smiling at them, and there's one person who's kind of got a frown on their face, who do you think they're going to focus on and get stuck on? That one frowning face. So their attention is different when they're anxious. Not only that, but if that person has kind of an unclear expression, they're going to assume, oh, that person is judging me and thinking I'm doing a horrible job. And God forbid that person yawns. If the person yawns, it's the end of the world. And then even when they look back on that experience the next day, They don't remember those 99 smiling faces. They're stuck on that one person who seemed not to be enjoying their presentation. So it's really a pervasive pattern when we're anxious. And so people need to recognize that, to realize that they're in some ways distorting what's happening in that situation. So that's the first thing you pointed out that's so important. The second piece that's really important is you talked about how we sort of feel defeated when we have those overwhelmed feelings, and then we sort of don't do anything, right? Yeah. We get frozen a little bit. And so recognizing that that happens and taking steps to change it, breaking down that overwhelming to-do list into manageable chunks. And as you said, when we put one foot in front of the other, so much easier to then put the next foot. So we've got to figure out how to break things down into these smaller steps. Even if we don't feel like it, take those first two steps. The next ones will then be a whole lot easier to do.
This is all jolly good advice. Now, your lab at the University of Virginia offers free online interventions to help people shift anxious thinking. Is that open to Kiwis?
It's open to people all over the world. So we've had thousands of people do our program. I think we're up to about 40 different countries right now, including New Zealand. So we absolutely invite people to join online. It's at mindtrails.virginia.edu. And the purpose of that program is to give people that practice I was talking about to think more flexibly. So we present people with lots of situations that raise potential concerns for them about how something is going to turn out. And we give them practice to think about the situations in ways that may be different than they would have assumed in terms of how it was going to go. And what we're trying to do is not make somebody positive all the time, but help to increase their ability to take different perspectives, to think more flexibly. And in so doing, to realize that they don't have to avoid all these situations that make them nervous, to recognize that they can handle the uncertainty and try doing stuff, taking those steps that we talked about.
You must hear back, well, I'm hoping that you do, from people who say to you, I've spent my whole life catastrophizing and you've turned that around. Do you get that kind of accolade?
You know, I feel so fortunate each and every day to work in the job that I do and in the field that I do. And it's just a privilege to talk to people who have been struggling and yet have the courage to try new things to see what will help them to manage their challenges better. Everybody has something that they struggle with. And I so admire people who are willing to sort of recognize what's hard for them and try to address those problems in their lives. And so I am so thankful to everybody who participates in our studies and to all of my clients as a therapist for their willingness to try to take on those challenges. And it's just an honor to get to work with them.
It's very good work that you do. Thank you so much for the time you gave us today.
My pleasure. It was terrific to talk with you.
Professor Bethany Teachman and mindtrails.virginia.edu is what to look up online.